So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
A lot of us remember the old Leave It to Beaver television program. Well, the new Leave It to Beaver stars Eddie Haskell. And we'd like right now for all of you folks to meet Eddie Haskell.
Hi, I'm Ken Osmond of the new Leave It to Beaver. And I'm inside the Greensboro Coliseum awaiting a man who I admire a great deal and who stands to inherit a great deal of money, Mr. James Cornette.
Osmond, how you doing, man?
All right.
To see you. You going to stick around, huh?
Yeah, hey, listen, that's a fine-looking tennis racket you have there.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you know, I fancy myself as quite a tennis player.
Well, letterman at Mayfield, you should be.
Hey, your mom has tennis courts up at her mansion, right?
Well, yeah.
Why don't I come up with you and we'll play a round of tennis?
Well, I don't. She's got time to put the ashtrays up, but promise you'll stay away from the silverware?
James, you wound me. You're listening to the babblings of a senile old bat.
Hey, let me tell you, she may be getting up there, but she's still loaded, so shh.
Oh, listen, what I really wanted to talk to you about were those two finely honed wrestling guys.
The Midnight Express, beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan, twin sons of different mothers, the greatest tag team in the world today. You gotta meet them.
Oh, that's great. Hey, listen, back to your mom's mansion.
Okay.
Do you think that she could bring a blender out to the jacuzzi?
I guess she could, but you know something? She always told me when I was growing up, that Haskell boy, he has such fine manners. I want you to be just like him, and a lot of people say I am.
I admire your mom. She has such fine taste.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting.
Here, present.
Today's edition is brought to you by Starbucks, the Christmas blend in grande form. Starbucks, it's a wonderful card. Ultimate giveaway.
No, don't actually talk about...
They're sponsoring me. They just gave me a free coffee to do so.
No, you shouldn't do that. What is the Christmas blend? What is that?
It's just the dark roast, I think, with something Christmassy added to it.
It's called the Christmas blend?
I think coffee is the ultimate benefactor of the placebo effect, where they can tell you anything, and it's all the same, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you talk to, like, a connoisseur, they'll probably tell you different.
Which I'm not. So this,
me neither.
I buy this because it's Christmas, and it feels Christmassy to have the Christmas blend. It gets me in the mood.
You're a sucker. That's what you are.
I am.
You're just a sucker for anything Christmas. So what if we labeled this the Christmas review of Clash of the Champions?
I would totally love to review a Christmas-themed Clash of the Champions.
No, nothing to do with Christmas. We're just going to label it the Christmas blend of podcasts.
It needs to have some connection to...
What connection does this coffee have?
Well, it's the Christmas season, and so? I'm getting ready for the Christmas season.
Does it taste like Christmas?
It does taste like Christmas. I'm making it
bullshit.
Taste like Christmas.
Bullshit. Does it taste like... What do people eat on Christmas? Does it taste like turkey?
You know what it tastes? It tastes...
Is that what people eat on Christmas? I don't know.
It tastes like a wild hair. A wild hair, which you appear to have up your ass this holiday season.
Whoa.
Yes.
Well, I'm just saying, I like Christmas. Christmas is great. Come on, man.
Are you not in the Christmas mood after we announced our Christmas contest this past Monday night on Review of Raw?
I forgot about it.
You already forgot about it?
Yeah, it's like I never even
heard
it.
The annual Christmas rapping extravaganza.
Oh, is that?
What do you do at Christmas? You rap.
Okay,
and
wow.
And people are going to rap us gifts.
Oh, brilliant.
In song form.
They're actually going to submit raps?
Raps, any kind of musical submission is welcome.
Like audio.
I want people to top what they did last year.
Okay. What did they do last year? I forget.
We got those great songs. It was the infamous Grav controversy last year.
Oh, that's right. Man, my memory is just gone.
That's what I'm here for.
I don't remember anything.
You're here to be funny. I'm here to remember obscure footnotes in our history.
Okay.
Those are our roles. Are you excited about Christmas now?
Yeah, now I am.
Are you excited to spend Christmas morning together doing a podcast?
No.
Well, you offered to on my, actually, you nodded your head while you were checking your phone when I outlined this on
my of course I am.
Christmas morning.
You know, like, Christmas morning is actually
Friday.
Are you sure?
It's a Friday.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's a Thursday. Yeah, we're going to postpone. I said all of this on Monday.
Oh, you did? Okay.
We're going to postpone Review Away a day and put up the Christmas show Thursday morning.
And why is that?
Because it's the Christmas show.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought the Christmas show coming out on Christmas. Why not?
Okay. Well, what else are you doing Pollock and Bauer? Bauer and Pollock, I mean?
On Christmas Eve? Doubtful.
On Christmas Day. What do we have on Thursdays now? What do we air on Thursdays now?
Thursday's kind of a quiet day.
So, because the Impact is on hiatus.
On hiatus for now. So, as of right now, our current schedule.
So, we're going to put Review Away on Thursday.
For that week.
Just that week.
For Christmas.
Okay. Well, I mean, why not every week going forward?
We can move stuff around to your liking.
What do people think? What do you guys like?
Okay. Well, yeah. Let people vote Wednesday or Thursday for Review Away.
All right.
I don't care. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, whatever.
I'll check if my Thursdays are free, though.
Okay, great. Sounds good, man.
That would totally throw everything off. No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, what do you do on Wednesdays? Or, well, I don't know, what do you do on Thursday? We would have to record on Wednesday to get it up on Thursday. What do you do on Wednesdays?
Wednesday morning, you and I are both busy.
Yeah, Wednesday night, I mean.
Oh, Wednesday night. Wednesday night is my one night I stay home. I do nothing.
Okay.
I feel I have to do something every night now, except for Wednesdays.
Anyway, well, we should talk all about this when we're not recording, when we're not wasting.
We're never not recording.
Valuable bit rate.
No, this is better. It's better to just include everybody.
All right.
How are you feeling? Great.
Fine.
Not that great? Okay.
I feel okay.
Yeah. Average.
You know, we record these shows it's 3 o'clock right now. Not
PM.
PM, yeah. I definitely feel like I have less energy, and I guess I'm a little, you know, I have a little less energy than now than I do in the when we record Review Raw at night, for instance.
Why is that?
I'm just a night person.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't have as much energy during the day, and therefore I'm just a bit more grumpy today, perhaps.
Oh, no, that's okay. There's nothing specific. It's just you're just
it's just the timing, my body clock. Just my body.
I usually get a sense from you when you're in a good mood versus a bad mood. It's rare you're in a bad mood.
I'm not in a bad mood.
You're in a grumpy mood.
I mean, it's just more like, okay, I'm here to do this task. Let's get this task done with.
Oh.
So I can move on to my next task.
What is the next task today?
Probably going to go for a swim a little later.
Where to? Do you have one at your new building?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, go for a nice swim.
I do too, and I've never once used my pool. Ever.
What's the matter with you?
I'm a weird person.
You definitely take things for granted when they're, you know, at your convenience. You know, when you can go anytime. It's not as special.
Sure.
You know? Like when you stay at a hotel, do you ever swim?
Sometimes. Sometimes you and I, when we've stayed at places for, we've gone swimming. We did that, was it in Halifax? We went to the pool?
Yeah.
It's always fun because there's always some fighter in there that's aggressively cutting weight away from the pool.
Do you like swimming?
It's something that I get bored after about 5 minutes of being in a pool, and what am I doing? It's like
you swim laps.
That's not entertaining to me. That's not
you
something
practice
exciting.
You practice your breaststroke.
My breaststroke.
Or your whatever, freestyle.
Have I told you my breaststroke story? When I joined the Blessed Trinity swim team in 1996.
You did not tell me this. No.
I joined my swim team, and I had to sign up for two races at the end of the year. So I did freestyle, and I did breaststroke.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember how freestyle did. Somewhere in the middle of the pack. Because you'd have to swim your race, and then they'd tabulate the times. And then they put this big whiteboard. They would list how you did in comparison to all the other students from various schools. And so I went for the breaststroke, and I looked at the top, and my head just kept going down, 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 and there, with the slowest time, John Pollock.
And
I realized then breaststroke was not for me.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting story. So what? You came last?
And I didn't quite know how to do breaststroke either. I was actually asking...
That was probably the problem.
I was asking for advice before the race began of like, do you move your feet and your arms together in one circular motion? How exactly do you do this breaststroke? And then I was considering, could I just do anything? Are they really going to stop me if I do fucking just front crawl here? I'm faster that way.
Wow. Well, that's, listen, well, the thing is, that's, I'm sure you had a bad experience with the breaststroke.
Oh, it was fine. I like that story.
But you could enjoy swimming without the pressure of competition.
Yeah, I'm just saying, when I go swimming, I like going into a pool when it's nice, it's hot out.
Yeah.
But then I'm ready to move on.
Okay.
I don't
need to. Are you somebody who likes to do things like in 15 minutes? You're a sampler. You like the sample.
You know what I like to do? I like to look at things like they are tasks. I'm here to do my task and then move on to the next task.
Gotcha.
And swimming, I've done the task.
Yeah, I could be like that too. But I mean, I think I need a bit more than 5 minutes.
That's all I need.
Okay.
You had quite the struggle watching this show, didn't you not?
You know, I just had issues off and on with the network.
Let's rail on the network some more.
No, but
our listeners love them.
But I actually don't know if we should, because we kind of identified, you know, some of the issue could be caused by our virtual IP.
I got a new one.
Oh, tell me the new one.
I went to watch this show on Sunday and decided I was going to watch the network version. I did post the YouTube version, which admittedly the audio is horrendous.
Daily Motion version.
Oh, I sent you that. There was the entire show as a YouTube file, but it was the audio is so low. It's tons of hiss. I actually contemplated doing your noise reduction thing, but I didn't have the program,
God.
And I was considering. I'm
going to take the audio from a YouTube file into an edit software?
I'm like, I just don't think that was going to work. So I didn't do that. But I started on the network version, and I was just waiting for it to crash. Well, it didn't crash. However, the audio was perfect on the network thing, but it was just like stuttering, the picture. Mm-hmm. So I was just like watching choppy pictures, but perfect sound.
It was like scrambled pay-per-view.
So what have I just outlined here? YouTube, perfect video, shit sound. Network, perfect audio, shit video.
You synced the two audio.
I synced them together.
How did you do that?
I literally had them both up on my screen and I just synced them. Like with Jim Ross's words, I synced them and hit play.
Yeah. What I would usually do is like I'd pause it at a certain point. Like Jim Ross is about to say, by God. Mm-hmm. So I'd pause it after by God. And then I let the other one play until he hits by God and then I hit play.
Yeah, which is essentially what I did. And for 2 hours... This is fucking great.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It was perfect.
You mastered the network.
I finally have learned how to watch the WWE Network. I just need a YouTube version of it. Because the WWE Network audio, stellar. I have nothing to complain about.
Forget about, pausing to go to the bathroom or anything, though. You'd have to resync everything.
I paused once, and it was, I didn't want to pause.
Oh, no.
Because I was like, oh, I don't want to this is perfect right now.
But again, I mean, I'm hoping that these are only issues that, you know, we're experiencing because we don't actually get the internet version of the network here in Canada.
Well, it's what we've got to live with, Wei.
Yeah.
It's a hard knock life in Canada.
It's a terrible life.
Have you sampled New Japan World yet?
I have not. How is it?
I haven't really
talked about it on Monday. But.
I signed up for it rather easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too hard to figure out. We're going to go dive through it, some of the archives.
Oh, wow. Maybe a potential review.
Maybe we will go back and review some New Japan.
Interesting.
At some point.
We can actually review the whole service. How about that?
The whole service?
Or just review the players and all that.
That's not a bad idea. One week, because a year from now, how many more of these are going to pop up? Is Ring of Honor going to have one? I think Ring of Honor, you look at, if TNA were to launch one in ROH, I think ROH would do much better if they put their library up there.
Yeah.
What is the library you would rather go back and watch?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think it's even close.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, just think about that whole era with Punk and Joe and, you know, Brian.
I hope all of these promotions launch players. I hope PWG does one. Do you know how much more stuff we could a lot of times when me and Wei choose a review, we want it to be as widely available to you as possible. It's part of the fun is hearing other people's random observations of just random stuff that happens on these shows. And when we pick a show that no one can watch, it's less fun.
Yeah. I think part of it, I'm assuming DVD sales are declining across the board, right? I mean, it's just a dying technology, is it not?
Oh, yes.
And the more, you know, DVD sales die, the more incentive you have for, you know, places like ROH or PWG to, basically kind of, you know, get rid of that way to make money and then focus on new technologies like this one.
Yeah, I just think you look at so many products that are out there. I mean, if PWG were to – now, they are somewhat restricted. They get all these incredible names, but part of that is the fact that they don't put on iPay-per-views because that would restrict – like the ROH talent from working those shows. And that's part of the benefit is that, you know, they run these great live shows with all these huge names. And the reason they can go to these big names is because of the fact they're not broadcasting them.
What would you pay for something like a ROH network? Access to all their archives. And let's say, you know,
their monthly events.
Yeah, monthly event. Live.
I mean, I think you could, I would not want to necessarily put it up at $10 because I think I don't think there's anyone. No, that's not true.
People compare the value that they get from like the WWE Network for that price, and I don't know.
Well, that's it. I mean, how many people are buying the ROH service that don't already have the WWE Network? I think it's a small number that would buy ROH over any other. So you're talking about these people's monthly fees are suddenly you've got the WWE Network, you're adding New Japan, you're adding ROH. There's a breaking point for people where, okay, I can't watch all this stuff, and I'm not spending $40 a month to have all these various services.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. You know, there's such a – it's a, such a much smaller operation, you know, a Ring of Honor or PWG that, you know, they have to have an aggressive price point that's interesting for a consumer but also enough for them to be able to profit off of. And I'm just curious what that would be.
Yeah. I mean, ROH would be taking in a lot of costs to just have – all of the broadband service to put all these shows up, have that thing running to, and what kind of volume you're going to have for these live shows. Is it going to be that much more when their iPay-per-views would be a disaster when you would have so many people logging in?
Anyway.
Maybe we'll start our own law, service.
Oh, the law.
And we'll just broadcast all day long.
Okay.
Every day.
Yeah. Put the archives up. I mean, people do that anyway. Just like archive. Are there people that will go back to? Actually, never mind.
I hope there are people that go back.
Yeah.
I will randomly get tweets from people. Like just the other yesterday, I believe I got a tweet from someone that some episode of Review of Raw from November of 2012. The link is not working. And that's the show. I can imagine Review Away is a very easy to go back. You don't need any context. It's just pick an event, listen to the review. I think those are very friendly towards people going back.
Yeah.
But a Review of Raw from November of 2012.
Yeah. What are you doing? What's wrong with you?
Well,
why are you listening to that?
I'm not going to criticize people for listening
to
our
stuff.
Outside. The archives are there for a reason.
Get some friends.
I think most people don't even know our archives exist on that message board. You can pretty much listen to everything we have done. Up there on the message board.
I'm actually very scared to go back to listen. Like, I would not want to hear anything that I've done 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I would hate to hear what I sounded like back then.
Yeah, you would probably notice gigantic differences, but most people probably wouldn't even.
Like, do you notice when you go back to like the law archives and like look up an old interview with your voice? Do you notice
it? Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I think that's just natural.
Do you notice any changes in your voice or like even your personality?
I think I certainly have a deeper voice now than I did before. I was also doing interviews at the age of 19 on the law, so that you're going to get some of that.
Right.
And I'll just listen back and be like, what a stupid question, or just Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I'll do that now. I'll do that in 5 years, going back and listening to this, I'm sure. Yeah, be like, wow, what the fuck?
Yeah, why did we talk about this for so long before?
Be a little more concise.
Yeah. Actually, the other day, I keep getting what I get tweets about are, you know, hey, you guys should review such and such show. Meanwhile, like, I look it up and, like, we've already done the show. And this happens consistently. Like, somebody just asked, hey, have you seen this Louis Theroux's Weird Weekends Wrestling Edition?
Oh, we have.
And then I just Googled it and, like, oh, shit, yeah, we actually reviewed it.
Well, you've got to figure by now, we're closing in on maybe 300 reviews.
Wow. Okay. Really?
Well, it's 5 years.
Wow, okay.
50 a year.
So, yeah, I don't know.
250.
Eventually, we're gonna be, I mean, we're saving some of them. We're saving some big ones, right? For like, you know, like WrestleManias, we're not trying to burn through all of them. But at some point, we're gonna have to like, get really creative.
You always say that, but I mean, I look at all the stuff that's out there.
Yeah.
I think there's so much stuff that we could review.
Okay, but you think about it. There
even,
is.
Even WrestleMania, I think we have minimum like 10 left. You know what I mean? And maybe, we do what? At perhaps. Most two a year.
Okay, okay. But I, yeah, there are a lot of events, but how many events are on the tops of people's minds that they want to hear about? You know what I mean? Like sometimes, like a request, whatever. Like I'm sure there are a lot of obscure things, but there are a lot of, also a lot of things that people immediately want to hear about. And I just don't know if that content, like an in-demand review type of show, is being made once per week at the rate that we review them. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, look at the ones that instantly come to mind. I mean, like a Heroes of Wrestling, a WOW pay-per-view. I mean, I don't know. I just look at, to me, any show we pick, there are gems in all of these that I find, personally.
Yeah, that we end up finding. It's like, you know, like a UFC fight card that doesn't look appealing at all, but the fights end up being great. I'm just saying, like, yeah, they could be great shows, but is there a lure? Is there the attraction?
You're the attraction.
I don't know.
Listen, and not to stroke our egos, I think if people have been listening to this for years, I think they have some kind of, interest in you and I discussing a show as opposed to just a show.
Right.
I mean, when we started this show, review podcasts, I don't know of any. And now, holy Christ, I think it's mandatory for every site to have some review.
No, I mean, I'm sure they've been.
I think there are a million review shows.
Okay, but it's not like we're innovators in it.
I'm not saying whatever. Maybe there were some that predated them. I'm just saying there's way more now. And the idea that, you know, it's the event that people care about.
We created reviews.
It's going to be the people that they tune into.
No, but I like to just exploit that we invented this.
Name one. I honestly ask you. Go out there
like,
and
what
ask.
What do you mean? Like, the people have been doing, like, raw reviews all, you know?
No, but I mean, going back and looking at historical events, I mean, those are
like
just
the retro reviews?
Yes. Not reviews.
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know how many wrestling podcasts there really were, you know, 5-6 years ago even.
I'm sure there were some. I'm not claiming we were the first, but I'm just saying today versus 5 years ago, there's so many more.
Right. Okay. And they're all great.
I love everyone's shows out there.
Yeah.
What do you listen to in wrestling right now?
You know, I don't listen to anything really consistently, but anytime there's something that, you know, people talk about a lot, obviously, you know, that CM Punk interview, I'll go and check out.
You heard the Punk interview?
Yeah.
The best was Sunday night, we were discussing the Punk issue, and everyone, like, our lines are jammed for 2 hours of people talking about Punk. I'm getting all these tweets about Punk. Everyone's weighing in with a different angle, different opinion, and who should tweet me? But one of our favorite callers. Any guess? Native of Canada.
Okay.
In Winnipeg.
Listeners?
Greg from the Peg.
Oh, right, okay.
Who tweets something to the effect of, I'm listening to this caller. Where is this CM Punk interview?
Oh, wow.
Like, he hasn't heard at all about this CM Punk interview that's going on.
You know, that doesn't really surprise me. It's a podcast, and I think, you know, there's so many people who don't even know what a podcast is that might listen to terrestrial radio.
I would imagine, if you are a wrestling fan and you're online, like, this was not just a big wrestling podcast. This was the number two podcast, period, in the U.S. last week.
I understand. But I think there are a lot of, when you're talking about, like, the law audience, there are people that might just listen to radio. Like, just listen to TSN radio. You know what I mean? That don't even, that never use a computer. There might be truck drivers out there.
I don't believe Greg from the Peg is that.
Okay. I don't know.
Like, he's a pretty.
But Greg from the Peg is also the guy who, I don't know what's up with him. Like, what was his?
He's a great caller. That's what he is.
He's a great caller.
I told that guy last time. Calling every week.
I guarantee you he's not listening to this.
Probably not. We know his podcast, findings are a little, delayed.
So. No, that doesn't really surprise
Eventually me. He'll hear from this about us.
No, he won't.
That was my favorite part of UFC 161. We're in Winnipeg, and I just hear this voice that instantly a YouTube video enters my head, and I come over to talk to this person, and he announces he is Greg from the Peg.
And wow.
I was just so excited. He was at the open workouts at the mall.
Right. Wow, that's amazing.
It was the highlight of that week. It certainly wasn't that card.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, Clash of the Champions. I would think, Wei, this would be your cup of tea. Tons of stuff to talk about, and it's 2 hours. Where have we been when it comes to Clash of the... I could review one of these all the time.
Yeah, okay.
There's like 35 of these Clash of the Champions. They're short.
Yeah.
Tons of... these crowds? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I watch this, and these kind of crowds make me sad because I feel like we never hear crowds like that. This was just a different era of pro wrestling. And this wasn't even... I mean, Jim Crockett Promotions was still very strong at this time, but this was kind of just past their peak run of like 85 through 87. In 88, it was right before the sale to Turner. But man, this crowd, they love these people in this ring.
This is a
give us wrestling. We love you.
Yeah.
And this was, the famous head-to-head show with WrestleMania 4, Sunday, March the 27th, 1988 in Greensboro, North Carolina. A very busy day for pro wrestling. Could you imagine watching a 3+ hour WrestleMania head to head with Clash of the Champions? And this show did extremely well on television.
Which one do you think was the better show?
Not even close. Clash of Champions blew away WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't even remember what was WrestleMania
4 was the tournament that Randy Savage won.
Oh, okay.
Just tons of short matches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, match quality, there is no comparison that this was the superior show. There was a video off the top just asking us all these questions that we would have answered at the Clash of the Champions. This sounded like the quiz of the champions.
Hmm.
And our announcers were Tony Schiavone and Bob Caudle, above the arena. And then during the actual matches, it would be the tandem of Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross, two men that are traditionally play-by-play men, working together. And certainly
play-by-play men that, you know, worked on opposing sides of the Monday Night Wars.
These
were the two voices of the Monday Night Wars.
And, of course, NWA very much limited at this point in time, into Canada at least. So it was a real fun treat, I think, to hear both of these guys together. Jim Ross, holy Christ. Like so many people, you're going to associate him with, like, the Mick Foley call and that WWE run. Man, him on this show. This dude was on fire for 2 hours.
This might have been him at his prime.
Wow. Just amazing to hear this man call some of these matches. And our first match, it's like an MMA fight. We had 3 5-minute rounds.
Yeah, what was this?
This was amateur wrestling style rules with Mike Rotunda defending the television title against Jimmy Jam Garvin, Kevin Sullivan in the corner of Rotunda, and Precious, Jimmy Garvin's legitimate wife, in his corner.
Yeah, and amateur wrestling rules, that means a one count.
A one count was how you could win this match.
Okay.
We had the Games Master, Kevin Sullivan. They were part of the Varsity Club at this point.
Mm-hmm.
A group that was so innocuous, but when Vince Russo came back to WCW in 1999, like one of his top priorities, we're bringing back the Varsity Club.
Yeah.
I remember that just being like, of all the ideas, this was the one that resonated with Vince Russo's brain that we got to bring it back.
Yeah, nothing says like a university student, like a 50-year-old Mike Rotunda and Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, what an updated look.
Yeah.
Teddy Long, our referee, and Jim Ross, just great with the background of all the major sports events that have happened in this venue, in the Greensboro Coliseum, which became... That was the home of Starcade for years and years before they would take Starcade out of there in 1987. We start the match off. There was this scoop slam, and then Garvin just dives at him for the pin, and Rotunda rolls to the floor. Crowd very hot for this. The early part just sees Garvin getting the better of the wrestler in Rotunda, and then Garvin is dropped neck first on the top rope. Rotunda clotheslines him. We cut to the crowd as he goes for the pin. And then we had this big dramatic countdown to the end of the first round, complete with updates that 3 minutes gone by, 2 minutes remaining, and then a countdown to the end of the first round.
They should do that in the UFC.
Yeah. Rogan just gets on the house mic and we
one
do
minute
10,
left.
9, and you definitely get these fighters just scrambling and doing stupid shit.
It sounds, they'll never do it, obviously. But it would definitely add to the excitement of the crowd. Unless it was like a really boring match, then like the crowd would be...
Well, it might liven the fighters up that, man, the pressure's on, the fans are standing, counting down. Do something!
I suppose. But in wrestling, of course, you want to play up the drama. And it worked. I thought it was such a simple concept, but I thought the counting down totally worked.
10-9 round for Jimmy Garvin. And then we go into round two. And Garvin goes for his brain buster while Kevin Sullivan leaps up onto the apron and Precious grabs him and she is pulled up to the apron. Garvin lets go of Rotunda, goes over to Sullivan, and this distraction allows Rotunda to pin Jimmy Garvin, retaining the title. But then Rick Steiner, also of the Varsity Club, runs in, followed by Precious with a 2x4, who proceeds to attack with the 2x4. Then goes and chokes Kevin Sullivan with a coat hanger.
Yikes. What was this? This was like this object had been played into the storyline.
I don't know where the coat hanger fit in with this story, but this crowd exploded at Precious choking the life out of Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
Precious would have been fired in 2010 if she had tried this, but back in 88, this was... fair play for a babyface.
Yeah.
And Garvin then pulls Precious away from the Varsity Club and leaves. And yeah, I think the crowd, I'm going to emphasize this many times throughout this review, white hot at times.
White hot.
White hot.
Yeah.
That means very hot.
Yes, that's right.
Use with a glove or touch, yeah. like a hot pan.
Okay. Thanks. You know, I actually really like the concept of this. At first I thought, oh, okay, this is going to be some fake amateur wrestling type of thing. I don't know how well this is
going
to work.
There's very little amateur wrestling. It was like, it was a pro wrestling match going for one count.
Exactly. But, you know, just, I thought instead of near falls, they would have, you know, like, it just looked like a real struggle at times for some, you know, well, one person to pin the other. It would just be like just a mere couple inches from the guy's shoulder being touching the mat. And I didn't think it would really work as well as it did, but I thought it was pretty cool.
And it seemed that the big focus was Precious getting her hands on Kevin Sullivan as they were doing this angle back and forth with the two of them. Bob Caudle then interviews Dr. Death Steve Williams, who has just finished off a successful tour of Japan. You notice it's always a successful tour of blank. It's never been less than stellar tour of Japan.
Or just a failure of a tour.
No, it's always a successful tour.
I suppose if you didn't complete the tour, it would be a failure.
Dusty and Magnum are good friends of his, he brings up, and he wants to challenge for the NWA title against the winner of Ric Flair and Sting tonight. He then goes on to talk about his physique. He says, I'm as clean as I look. And I've been in the gym pumping iron.
All right.
So, steroid-free Dr. Death Steve Williams was the implication here, which would be a theme for some of these interviews with Nikita Koloff later. You get high on working out, not on drugs. And then they just had a graphic teeing up the next match that read, next, Fantastics and Midnight Express face up.
They face up.
They face up. They're not facing off. They're facing up. Cornette introduces the Express, this being the Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane version, and they would be defending the United States tag titles. A tag division so big we had two separate tag titles at this point in the NWA, defending against the Fantastics, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, who we watched part of November to Remember a few weeks ago.
Oh, right. Yes.
Here he was during his prime here with the Fantastics.
Some fantastic blonde mullets on display here in this match.
This match brought to you by 1988. Big brawl to start this match. And what a... I mean, this was very novel at the time to be using all of these weapons, which I feel if I were to watch this match today, I would groan at this. This would be another Bram-Tommy Dreamer match. But here, with the use of chairs, we had tables, Jim Cornette just weakly tossing these chairs at the baby faces. This crowd was unglued here. The Express were both thrown upside down into the corner, crowd going nuts here. They double teamed Rogers, and then the Express finally got the heat, and this turned into a traditional tag match at this point. Cornette then held up a table that Rogers was thrown into. Then Eaton comes in and he hits a power slam, a top rope elbow drop. and then is scoop slammed onto the table, and Eaton hits a bulldog onto the table into the ring. Tommy Rogers finally makes the hot tag to Bobby Fulton, and Jim Ross just proceeds to yell, "He made the tag! He made the tag!" Just screaming at the top of his lungs, but the referee missed the tag. He didn't see this, and this prompts Bobby Fulton to throw the referee to the floor, and they give the Midnight Express their own finish, the rocket launcher. Rogers pins Bobby Eaton at 10:19, and this crowd, I think, had a collective orgasm at this title change. They had just seen history unfold. The United States Tag Team Championships belong to new men, the Fantastics. But then Randy Anderson comes in, and he announces that Tommy Young's three count is null and void because he was thrown to the floor, and the decision is reversed. The Fantastics have been disqualified, and the Midnight Express retain their titles, and it leads to a post-match beatdown of Bobby Fulton by the Express, who then pull out a belt and start whipping the Fantastics, including Jim Cornette, whipping the shit out of them with this leather belt. I love this match.
Yeah, I think these days we look at all these, you know, dusty finishes and we tend to groan, but I feel like when a crowd is that hot for, you know, a title change and that hot for a feud, like they seem to be for this and a lot of the other matches, it felt really satisfying to see, you know, this audience manipulated through this series of emotions.
Well, this finish, I mean, it's novel the one time you see it. I think for this promotion at this particular time period, it was the over-reliance of this finish to get that big pop and then take it away from people. And it was just the regularity of which they exercised this particular finish that I think drove a lot of people off.
Oh.
And then, you know, over at Atlantic City, WrestleMania, huge, huge day for celebrity involvement. How are we going to counter this? Well, they dug in deep over at TBS, and Bob Caudle notes that one of the celebrities in attendance, Ken Osmond, a.k.a. Eddie Haskell, from the new Leave It to Beaver, which was airing on TBS at the time, he's at ringside for a pre-recorded interview with Jim Cornette, who comes in, they discuss tennis, and Ken Osmond coming to Jim Cornette's home and wants an invite. Cornette says his mother has always wanted Jim to grow up to be like Eddie Haskell. And this would only be the beginning of Ken Osmond on this particular show. Were you a Leave It to Beaver fan, Way?
Mm-mm.
Man, I watched the show all the time as a kid.
Oh, who did he play?
He was Eddie Haskell.
Well, who the hell is that?
He was Wally's good friend who was always, he was always scheming. He always would come over to the house and would be so charming to Ward and June Cleaver.
Well, then, which one is Beaver?
That would be Jerry Mathers.
Okay, whatever.
You need to go back and watch them Leave It to Beaver.
No, I don't give a shit.
Wow, an American institution, Leave It to Beaver, and you don't give a fuck.
I don't.
Man.
No, what I do care about.
Tony Dow.
Who?
He played Wally.
Okay.
I know a lot about Leave It to Beaver.
That's great, John.
I probably saw way more episodes of Leave It to Beaver than you can imagine as a child. It was always on.
No, I can't imagine watching even one, so.
What about the new Leave It to Beaver?
Is there a new one?
I'd never have seen the new Leave It to Beaver, but that was like 20 years after the sitcom. So imagine they rebooted Full House now with everyone growing up. That's what the new Leave It to Beaver was.
Supposed to be a continuation?
Yes.
Of their
lives?
With
the original cast.
This is an actual show?
This was what it was on TBS. This is why Ken Osmond was there to promote
this. It can't be a serious show, you know? It would have to be some type of adult thing.
Well, I've never seen the new Leave It to Beaver.
Okay.
But maybe.
Well, how do you become a grown man and still be named Beaver? First of all, you'd probably change your name to like Bruce.
Have you never had a nickname in your life?
Wu-Tang? Not Beaver. Isn't Beaver his real name?
That was his nickname.
Oh, what's his real name?
I actually don't know what the character's actual name was.
Oh, you're not as big of a fan as I thought then. Huh?
What was his name? It'll hit me as soon as I, Beaver Cleaver. Theodore. That's right. Theodore Cleaver.
Okay. All right.
God, how old is he now? He was born in 50s. Oh, no, that was the first appearance. Oh, this is all.
All right, let's move on.
You don't want to talk about Jerry Mathers. All right. Well, let's move on. Bob Caudle is then with Al Perez and Gary Hart, who is here to make not just a challenge, a legitimate challenge to Dusty Rhodes for his United States Championship. And this came the day after a pretty heavy angle where Dusty Rhodes had attacked Jim Crockett Jr. with a baseball bat. So there was this pending controversy of what was going to be the ruling towards U.S. champion Dusty Rhodes. And that was this shadow hanging over this clash of the champions. Dusty Rhodes taking a baseball bat to an authority figure.
It's crazy. It'd be like George St. Pierre attacking Dana White with a baseball bat.
A hockey stick.
Hockey stick, yes.
And Gary Hart says, "Let's hope they legalize baseball bats, Rhodes." And Hart cuts this great promo. Al Perez does not cut a great promo. In fact, his words justified why Gary Hart was here with him. And Hart ends it by saying, "To just remember that he invented the dirty deeds, brother."
Oh.
Maybe Dean Ambrose, when looking for a finish, caught this promo.
Right, because that's also
the creator of the dirty deeds, Gary Hart.
Yes.
Maybe Dean Ambrose, he's going to pose a legitimate challenge to somebody with a baseball bat.
Wow, all these connections, John.
Listen.
You're making all these connections.
That's what you've got to do, Wei.
Okay.
You ever heard of that saying? This is because that is.
I haven't heard that, but
it's an old Latin saying. This is because that is.
You got a lot of smart things to say.
Christmas blend. Then we went to a woman that would never be cutting promos in her career. Frances Crockett of the Crockett family, here to announce the top 10 seeds for the upcoming Jim Crockett Senior Memorial Cup tournament.
These are rankings.
The rankings.
I wonder if
the media voted on this.
Yeah, I love this.
So we had, in order from 10 to 1, Ivan Koloff and Dick Murdoch, Sting and Jimmy Garvin, the Varsity Club, the Fantastics, Wyndham and Luger, the Powers of Pain, the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, Nikita Koloff and Dusty Rhodes, the Superpowers, and then number one, your tag champions, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, and I will go to say that I put way more personality into that than one Frances Crockett, who could not have been more monotone in this delivery.
Thing is, though, I assume she was some type of authority figure, and I don't necessarily want a ton of personality in my authority figures. I like the Jack Tunney, you know, just ultra-serious businesswoman. She's here to deliver a message. She's like the head of a condo board. Here to deliver a message, and then she told us
our rates are going up.
Exactly, I thought it was really cool. You know,
I think we've gone so far in the authority angle that forever Jack Tunney was considered a terrible commissioner, and today I think he would be such a welcome change.
Oh yeah,
because we've seen so many goofy authority figures, so much over the top, that a sterile presentation is new. It's different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in wrestling, so often we just judge people based on how good of a promo they are, how big of a personality they are. But I think you need roles where, you know, you're like supporting characters who aren't necessarily big personalities, too.
Our next match was this was very confusing just for the geography of it all. It was a Chicago street fight, but it was a Texas barbed wire match.
Okay.
So appealing to both Chicago and Texas in Greensboro.
I see. Gotcha.
Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors taking on Ivan Koloff and the Powers of Pain. And, of course, the Powers of Pain are so much remembered for their WWF run as this idea that they were simply the WWF's answer to Demolition. But it was, in fact, the NWA where they were first before
going to the WWF's answer to Demolition?
To the Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors.
Okay. I thought Demolition was their answer to the Road Warriors.
Well, there were many answers to the Road Warriors. I guess the Demolition was their direct copy, but the Powers of Pain were also kind of thrown into that comparison point. This is a non-sanctioned match, and I like the added touch that they didn't even have a bell to start. and they explained that the six-man titles are not on the line.
They're six-man titles?
They had tag titles, secondary tag titles, six-man titles.
Wow.
They love their gold in the NWA.
Who are the six-man tag champs?
It would have been...
Dusty.
I believe Dusty and the Road Warriors had the six-man tag titles at this point. And the referee is on the floor to declare the winner. Paul Jones is in the corner of the heels, Koloff in the Powers of Pain, Dusty wearing his Road Warriors face paint.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one greater than Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Animal is wearing this hockey mask to protect his eye, which was recently injured by Koloff and the Powers of Pain. And this match was just a brawl. There was a gorilla press slam by Hawk to Koloff, who was bleeding early on. Dusty hit the most Dusty DDT you could envision to the Barbarian, followed by a second one. Shivani notes it. It hasn't been long, but all six are already exhausted. Calling it like he sees it. There was a power slam by Animal to Warlord, and then Barbarian misses the save, and Animal just gets the pin. The referee comes in and counts three, so suddenly this became a sanctioned match. And then after the match, they take Animal's mask off, and the eye is taped up, and they attack the eye. Koloff uses the chain on Hawk, but Dusty makes the big save, clearing the ring, with Ross yelling that, "Hawk has the chain! They have hurt Road Warrior Animal once again!" And just selling this chain attack.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of belts, chains.
I know, a lot of hardcore.
Coat hangers.
I mean, you had barbed wire here. I mean, obviously not, you know.
The barbed wire was kind of just there for decoration.
Yeah.
It didn't really become a big part of the match. And no. This was a quick match. I mean, this was about 5 minutes or so.
But still, you know, you think about the WWF at this time in the 80s, and I don't think they come anywhere close to the level of potential violence that was displayed here.
I mean, and that was always the big belief that, you know, if people were sampling both products, how could they not go with the action from the NWA? They had a lot of names. These crowds just were in love with these characters. The in-ring quality, I think most can defer to the NWA as being superior. But
yeah.
The WWF had the big, larger-than-life characters, and mm-hmm. that ultimately won out. But for a number of years, I mean, the NWA was very competitive with the WWF, even outdrawing them in some markets. And I've got to say, if I was a 14-year-old kid, I completely would have been watching that NWA product religiously.
Yeah, but you wouldn't miss, you know, the barbers and, you know, nails. You wouldn't miss that.
I think I would have been a total snob in 1988.
Oh.
Like, oh, look at this crap from the WWF. I think it would depend on your age. I think if you were, you know, a young kid, I'm,
it would depend on your personality, too.
I guess so.
Yeah.
What would you have preferred?
I don't know. Hard to say. I think I would have enjoyed both for their own merits.
Could you imagine us doing a... How would a podcast have worked in 88? You and I get together and record it to a cassette and mail it out to our listeners?
I don't even know if they had, like, portable cassette recorders.
Maybe a beta?
Yeah.
Audio on a beta? Is that possible?
Or maybe a record. We'd have to etch it into a record.
We could put up a sign at our local grocery store. We'll come to your home and review a show, and we just go door to door and review it in real time.
Okay.
That's how it would have worked. That would have been the podcast of 88.
That would have been very inconvenient.
I probably would have got tired after home number five.
We certainly wouldn't have access to all these shows, you know. We would have to
I'd splurge for a dish or something. I mean, if you lived in the U.S., chances are you got the Superstation. I mean, that was the appeal, was that they were – it's fascinating. I'm reading this book right now on Ted Turner, the whole creation of TBS and getting their own satellite dish and just all the problems they had and the creation of CNN. And it's really something to look at the launch of this station and how it just – it shouldn't have worked, but it did. And what's so funny is that wrestling is not mentioned once so far. I'm like three quarters of the way through the book. Wrestling is not mentioned once.
It
really kind of, as much as Ted Turner is associated with being Vince McMahon's opposition.
Oh, it's a small part.
Wrestling
small
was not
part.
Even a pea in this guy's brain in terms of, it was content. I'm sure he had some affinity for it, but probably not something that was taking up too much of his time.
Yeah.
Next up, Tony Schiavone plugged a new show they were launching on Sundays at 5:35 p.m., which, in my Ted Turner book, I learned, you know why they always did that on TBS at these awkward, like, 5 minute past the hour type of start
times?
Why
is that?
It was because in the TV guide, they would have it adjusted
So it would stand out.
That's actually
And it was just like you'd look at the grid and it would be the TBS slot would be, it wouldn't just be all in one big list of what's coming up at 7 o'clock. They'd be adjusted for 6:05.
It's pretty smart. But at the same time, I would always get so annoyed by it because the shows wouldn't necessarily end at the top of the hour.
So if I wanted
to watch another show, I was going to be late for my next show if I wanted to stick around and watch the rest of this TBS show.
Well, the idea as well could have been that, you know, you're tuning in for whatever. Whatever the programming was at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, you tune in, you'd see 5 minutes of wrestling and the final 5 minutes of their big Saturday night show. And
Like an overrun.
Yeah, exactly. The biggest angle of or match of the week would be in that final 5 minutes. It's like, yeah, maybe I want to catch some of this as I'm waiting for whatever movie was to follow at 8.
It's interesting. I wonder, in the end how successful it was. Because I imagine if it was that successful, people would still be doing it.
I haven't watched TBS in years. I can't even tell you if they still do it to this day. Then we have Bob Caudle with a new look and clean cut Nikita Koloff, who had long been the Russian heel, now in a white suit and a baby face, still with the heavy Russian accent.
A different look, Nikita Koloff.
Nikita Koloff, you see, I am different. There is nobody like Nikita Koloff. I am new breed Russian, you see. In the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev have the glasnosti perestroika. Well, this is Nikita Koloff's glasnosti perestroika. I wish I could say in the last 2 months that I have had a good time, just take it easy, but it's not true, you see. I have had much trouble. I have talked to many young people in the past 2 months, and you know what I talk about? I talk about this right here. What is it?
Get high on sports, not drugs.
That's right. You see, I talk to young people about how important it is to have good health for your life, you see. Because to me, life is very important and health is very important. Somebody close to me each day I see fight for life. And when Kevin Sullivan come out here, when Dick Murdoch come out here, Mike Rotundo come out here and try to take my health from me and my life, then you see, I become a fighter.
And he showed us this poster that read, "Get high on sports, not drugs."
Ooh.
And he proceeds to talk about how life and health are very important. Someone close to him fights for his life every day. He doesn't need a belt to be a champion. And he sends a warning to Kevin Sullivan. He wants the NWA title. He warns Tully Blanchard about his recent attack on Magnum TA. And he's going to win the Crockett Cup with Dusty Rhodes, just like they did the prior year. This was a very tough promo for some to decipher. But this man was setting up some programs for himself.
Yeah, I guess
so. A lot of problems he wants to deal with.
So was this he was still a heel at this point?
No, he was a babyface.
Oh, so
aligned with Dusty.
A babyface motivational speaker that advises kids not to do drugs.
Well, that's very babyface-like.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose these days it would be the complete
opposite.
Get
high on drugs, not on life.
Yeah. That would be the opposite. I mean, to me it just seemed like a total heel thing, you know?
About telling kids not to be on drugs?
Well, these days it would totally be that because it's way too clean cut.
Well, he was a babyface at this point.
Okay.
The two would end up not returning to win the Crockett Cup because after this weekend, Dusty would not only be suspended for his infraction with the baseball bat, he would also be stripped of his United States Championship.
Wow.
And unfortunately, awful. Nikita Koloff not having the ability to go for the Crockett Cup again. But I also liked some of these promos that all of these guys, they had their individual programs coming up, but they also wanted their ultimate goal was the NWA title.
Mm-hmm.
And that was everyone's focus. And that's what I really enjoyed about the early, early days of NWA TNA was that they always had their championship program, but they always had all these guys gunning for the title. And you never had a shortage of challengers. You never had, oh, we got a pay-per-view coming up. We got to get some guy ready. You always had everyone's ultimate goal was the title. And I always liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the tag title match. The main tag titles. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard with J.J. Dillon defending against Lex Luger and Barry Windham. And Anderson and Blanchard immediately attacked the leg of Luger and just making frequent tags in and out, working down the leg. Eventually, Windham is tagged in, fires up on the heels. There's a lariat delivered to Blanchard, a power slam, and then he applies a sleeper. And as Blanchard tries to break it rolling into the ropes, they fall to the floor with Windham holding on to the sleeper.
Arn then comes in, changes the tide, hits a spinebuster to Wyndham. Wyndham comes off the ropes, colliding with Blanchard. Both men are down selling. Wyndham hits this big blow, flops down to the mat, and then Wyndham kicks out of the slingshot suplex by Blanchard. And then as he's falling down, makes the tag to Luger. He comes in. It leads to all four in the ring brawling, and J.J. Dillon grabs a chair from the floor, comes up to the apron, but Luger reverses an Irish whip, sending Arn into the chair, and Luger pins Arn at 9:34. Mm-hmm. And Jim Ross tops himself with this call. Another crazy reaction to this title change.
And what it should be. Now, all four men are in. JJ!
JJ's got a chair!
He's got a chair!
Calls it a new era in tag team wrestling. No one could touch this guy for eliciting emotion.
Yeah, he was great.
And this title switch stuck.
Yes, but it was the same finish. The manager accidentally hitting his own guy. So, whatever. But the match was great, you know. I'm watching all these shows, and the thing is, they all kind of felt like final acts to their stories, meaning that, you know, the heat for all these matches seemed to be at their peak, and you know, there really wasn't that calm, slow period at the start to really kind of get you in there. And I think it's awesome. But I guess watching it retroactively as a standalone show, for me, somebody who has not seen any of the stuff prior to this, you can't help but feel like you missed out on a ton beforehand, before watching these.
My correction from earlier. Ivan Koloff and the Powers of Pain were the six-man tag champions, and then the titles would be vacated and won by Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors later that summer.
Well, thanks.
Now that you're up on your six-man tag, did you know Tenryu won these six-man tag titles with the Road Warriors in 88 as well?
Oh, wow. Did he painted his face too, I assume?
I would think you would have to. Mm-hmm. Be like Dusty. And unfortunately, the six-man tag titles, they would not have much of a run after that. Revived by NWA 2000, the promotion. In 1998, won by the Misfits.
Wow, really?
They defeated the Lost Boys and Slayer.
Oh my God. The band?
I don't know.
And the rap group?
And the movie. And then the titles were forever retired in December of 98.
Okay, wow.
What a run. And then we go to our main event. The match that is most synonymous with this show and maybe Clash of the Champions period. Ric Flair and Sting for the NWA title, and we would have guest judges.
Judges, why?
Well, Wei, if this goes the full limit, we need a winner. There must be a winner.
And has this always been implemented, this judge system?
This would be for special situations.
Okay. I don't mind that.
They spared no expense here. I mean, sometimes we get critical of judging in mixed martial arts, but they were not fucking around at the inaugural Clash of the Champions, bringing in the best here.
There must be a winner. We do have judges outside the ring. Introducing to you right now our panel of judges. Gary Juster, of the Member of Board of Directors of the National Wrestling Alliance. Former NWA professional wrestling star, Sandy Scott. The Pet of the Year, Patty Mullen. And someone you know and love from the hit television series, Ken Osman, who portrays Eddie Haskell on the new Leave It to Beaver. Also, we'd like to welcome Jason Hervey, star of the Wonder Years.
We had Gary Juster, today of Ring of Honor fame.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
A man who we dealt with quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize he was involved way back
then.
Oh,
he was involved with WCW right up until they went out of business in 01. Sandy Scott, former wrestler, and Pet of the Year, Patty Mullen.
Ooh.
Patty Mullen.
Pet of the Year.
And then, for whatever reason, just to sit there and watch, Ken Osman and Jason Hervey.
What, they weren't judges?
They were not judges. Because they only read the three judges at the end. They had three judges, and then these two, I don't know what they were here for. I guess just to have a ringside seat.
I didn't mind a five-judge system.
Well, I don't know about these five as the exact greatest representation
I think
judges.
Jason Hervey wouldn't know his shit. I don't know about the
Patty Mullen?
Patty Mullen, is she a wrestling fan?
I don't know anything about Patty Mullen, but okay. We're about to.
Whatever. But, you know, sometimes maybe the problem with MMA is that there aren't enough judges. Maybe you do a five-judge system.
Listen, that's not the worst idea in that you might get some wacky judges scorecard, but if you have five, much less of a chance that you're going to have five ridiculous cards. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the worst idea at all.
Maybe 10.
Like 35.
Jury.
Patty Mullen didn't have much of a career. Penthouse pet of the year. Not even a playmate.
Yeah.
Luscious and sensuous, well-built brunette stunner, Patty Mullen was an actress and model who, alas, only acted in two movies during her regrettably short-lived cinematic career. Mullen hails from New Jersey. Patty first turned heads with a steamy nude pictorial as a pet of the month in the August 1986 issue of Penthouse. She was named Pet of the Year in 1987. She both graced the cover and did a follow-up nude pictorial in the June 1988 issue of Penthouse. Mullen was quite appealing and eye-catching in a dual role as Judy and Kiki LaRue in the amusingly cruddy 80s slasher send-up Doom Asylum. Mullen gave an even better, more assured, and flat-out hilarious performance as the titular, lovely, yet lethal streetwalker in the uproariously outraged, tongue-in-cheek horror comedy romp Frankenhooker.
Okay, we gotta watch that.
And this is in her IMDb bio. In addition, Patty appeared as a judge in the televised wrestling program Clash of the Champions.
Oh, career highlight, to be sure.
Lives in Florida is part of her trivia.
Frankenhooker.
This might have been the peak of her career. Clash of the Champions.
Wow, nice.
Did you pick up that steamy issue of Penthouse?
I was three at this time. Or four. Yeah, three.
Didn't do your research?
No, I just Google image searched her, though. So I've already seen it. They're nice. Like, they're retro.
Can you look at someone
vintage
nude from 1987? I mean, do you think of what they're
present? I just did. What are you talking about?
Is that kind of weird?
No.
I mean, that was close to 28 years ago.
What's so weird about that?
I mean, in your head, are you envisioning what she looks like now?
No, of course not.
How old do you think she was at this point?
Probably like 18.
Early 20s? Like I don't think she was 18. That would insinuate she did that.
Sorry,
16.
Yeah, 19 maybe. I meant the pictures. You're talking about the match? Whatever, I don't know, 21, 22. Doesn't matter.
Maybe one day we'll review Frankenhooker, which I very much want to watch now.
Yeah, just based on the name. I think it'd be a great wrestling character.
Look at this. This looks fucking... Dude, it has a 6.1 rating on IMDb, which is much higher than you would assume Frankenhooker.
I would assume that like Dan Lavransky probably owns this on like a reel.
I bet he would.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
if anyone has seen Frankenhooker...
He knows all about these movies.
So the match begins. J.J. Dillon is placed in the cage above the ring. Referee is Tommy Young. And the match starts off with Sting having getting the better of Ric Flair. And Ric Flair always excelled at this, of just being conveying that he had finally been outmatched.
Mm-hmm.
This guy just had Ric Flair's number. And that was the goal of Ric Flair's matches, was to convince everyone the title is switching hands now, and somehow Ric Flair would escape defeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is so good at it. He's so good at like looking like a coward. He's so good at like first of all being cocky, talking himself up, and then once he gets into the ring, just looking like he doesn't want to be here.
What did you think about the different philosophical direction, that the WWF always had the strong baby face that conquered all the heels, and the NWA, for the most part, it was kind of the chicken shit heel who would escape by the skin of his teeth. But the idea was, whenever you would watch a Ric Flair match, you're never quite sure, is this going to be the night he drops the title?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they obviously both worked. You know, I thought both were obviously very successful.
For a time.
And I think if you had interesting characters in either case, then both would be fine.
We saw some Kimuras back and forth here.
Oh, okay.
Hammerlocks by definition
here. Yeah.
And then a series of leapfrogs into a gorilla press slam. And then Tony Schiavone notes that should this match end before the time limit, we do have some standby matches.
Sting holding on. We announced earlier if this match would end before this program is over, we do have some standby matches. Larry Zbyszko and Shane Douglas for the Western States title.
Including Shane Douglas.
What?
I just... how that Shane Douglas somehow worked his way into this review. So I thought the streak was dead.
The streak continues.
Amazing.
One more week.
I couldn't wait to this review to message you and inform you.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Of all the guys, I love that little added thing that, hey, you look at it, it's like, okay, we've got an hour left of TV time here. This has to be going the whole length.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that little detail.
Oh, yeah.
It takes no effort. Just...
it makes you think that there's a potential.
It makes us feel like this is a sport, mm-hmm. and it can end at any time, mm-hmm. and we know that we have to go to the top of the hour, and we have a contingency plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very smart.
Anytime they cut to J.J. Dillon, this guy just so animated in this shark tank above the ring, as they would cut to him, his hands are through, he's trying to coach Ric Flair. Sting just keeps Flair grounded. There was a long headlock. Ross explains he's not going to win with this hold, but his significant strength is going to make this very painful. I loved when they cut away to Patty Mullen, and she just exemplified this blank stare on her face. And Jim Ross, just looking at her face, says, "I'm sure she's used to action."
What?
Jim Ross's observations. She's used to action.
Okay.
Flair just selling, making Sting look like a killer. Sting is working on his lower back with a long bear hug spot as Flair just yells in agony. Ross explains that this will set up the Scorpion Deathlock eventually by wearing down the back. Flair would eventually get the advantage after Sting misses him in the corner and is holding his left elbow, and Flair would work that over. Sting misses a clothesline, flies to the floor. Eventually, Sting made a comeback. Flair then ducks a clothesline. Sting then goes over the top rope. Sting no-sells a neck snap on the top rope. And the match just really built and built. The crowd was with this the whole way through. Flair goes to the top, gets tossed off, gets crotched on the top. Dillon's calling for a DQ on that hold. Sting then applies a figure four. They cut to Patty Mullen, and Schiavone just notes, she looks like she is in complete amazement. The woman with just the best facial reactions. Sting then pops up and yells to the crowd, "Now you know how to party or what?" And Flair gets shoved down by Tommy Young during an altercation with the two. Then we see Flair take the Ray Stevens bump into the corner, goes to the floor. Ross just howling that he flew over the top of the judges with this crazy call. Flair is sent into the barricade on the floor. Great final 5 minutes with some near falls. Flair then comes off the top. Sting reverses, lands on top for a two count. Sting then is no-selling these chops from Flair, hits the Stinger Splash, and applies the Scorpion Deathlock with 30 seconds to go. Time expires with the hold applied, and we have to go to Eddie Haskell, Wayne Arnold, and a penthouse pet, as well as a former wrestler. This is who the balance of power remains with, as they would render their decisions. And Patty Mullen scores the match for Ric Flair. This was Pride rules. You just wrote a name down on a piece of paper. There were no
I prefer that.
Breakdowns. Yep. Gary Juster believes that Sting won the match. And Sandy Scott, a man who was paid to analyze a match and declare a winner, voted it a draw. It was just too close. He can't.
Yeah, but yeah, that's how he saw it.
And we have a draw. Therefore, Ric Flair retains the title. I would have brought in Sudden Death judges Ken Osmond and Jason Hervey.
True.
To break this.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a pivotal match for Sting's career. He was realistically, after coming over from the UWF during the buyout in 87, he was essentially just a mid-card babyface. And after this match, was really perceived as a main event guy. And this would eventually culminate in him winning the title in 1990 and a career-making performance for Sting and maybe his most famous opponent in Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool. I mean, especially with Sting in the news this week, to go back and see him, you know, pretty much in his physical, what looked to be his physical prime. And I thought a very good match. I did find it a little slow for my taste, especially since I couldn't really hear the audio too quickly, and that really was half of this whole show. It was just
you had to
crowd.
Sync it up. It's a completely different show.
I should have. But I thought, you know, the great use of the clock again on the show to build tension towards the end, some great counters at the end, and some incredible selling by Flair.
Shivani, Ross, and Bob Caudle recap the show. They plug their main event show the next Sunday, and Shivani emphasizes, we are the major league of professional wrestling. Go fuck yourself with your WrestleManias and your Trump Plaza shows. And this show would do tremendous number, a 5.8 rating. The main event, it peaked with a 7.8. And at that point in time was the most watched wrestling match in the history of TBS. So a gigantic success as a free television show going head-to-head against WrestleMania. And cable companies were very upset about this head-to-head battle that might have drawn business away from WrestleMania. But a very famous show in NWA history, especially maybe the most famous Flair and Sting match, I think you could say. And I really enjoyed this show quite a lot. I give it an 8.5 out of 10. Very fun two-hour show.
I'll give it a 7.
With audio, it would have boosted it to an 8.
Maybe.
I bet.
Maybe.
All right. Well, there. That was our look at the Clash of the Champions, and we're going to head over to the feedback thread. Boy, I really want to check out Frankenhooker. I hope that's on YouTube.
Next week, Frankenhooker.
All right. Why don't you start us off?
We go to Brad, who says, I wasn't very excited that you guys picked this show to review last week, but when the show opened with the amazing graphics package and voiceover, I was won over. This was some cutting-edge stuff for 1988. Lightning bolt and belt close-ups. Radical. This could have been the continuance of the new streak. If Sting and Flair didn't go the full 45 minutes, we would have had a Shane Douglas match. But I would really pass on that match because the Sting-Flair match was excellent. This rabid crowd made this match even more exciting. I've never been a big Sting fan, but the way he worked with Flair, I could see why he was becoming a main eventer at this time. Loved hearing Flair yell, my goddamn back in the ring. It was beautiful.
Flair had a penchant for the use of goddamn. Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay. From McWhalen. I enjoyed the show quite a lot. The U.S. and NWA tag title matches were great. The Midnight Express is phenomenal anytime you watch them, and the crowd loved Luger and Wyndham winning the titles. Flair and Sting was simply a classic, and it's great to see Sting evolve into a main eventer before our eyes. Fun fact, this was the last time WWE and NWA would run paper. Well, one was a pay-per-view. One was a free special. And he gives the show an 8 out of 10.
Okay, we go to Christian Small, who says, this show really proved that the NWA produced the better in-ring matches than WWE. The main event tag and the U.S. tag matches were all great. The main event especially stood out. It was without a doubt Sting's breakout match, and back then, whenever those two were in the ring, it was gold. After watching the tag title match, I looked online to see if it was a dusty finish. I found out that a few weeks later, Wyndham turned on Luger to join the Horsemen, losing the titles back to Arn and Tully. I'm personally not a fan of booking like that. There's only two things that bugged me with this show. The first is, why do a one count in a TV title match? Maybe you want to speed things up, but you could have easily done that match with a three count at the end.
Well, they explained. Yeah, I mean, it was the
Varsity Club, man.
You had the amateur wrestler in Mike Rotunda imploring amateur rules.
The second was, why did the six-man have barbed wire around the ropes outside the first couple of seconds? It played pretty much no part in the match, and you couldn't even tell it was there in the wide shots. Well, because they're not crazy.
From Jim Powell, or Chris in Ottawa.
Weren't pre-Nitro WCW event intros the best goddamn thing ever? They always managed to get me in the mood for a nice nostalgia trip, not to mention Tony Schiavone's Magnum PI mustache. Didn't much care for the opener, not so much the rules, but more because Jimmy Jam Garvin looked like he was working in tighty whities. But how awesome was Precious in the post-match? And isn't Jim Crockett precious as, Jim Cornette precious as well? That whole segment, from those 80s front row smart marks chanting Cornette rules, to Cornette smacking referees with his tennis racket and whipping Bobby Fulton within an inch of his life, was one of the best damn things I've ever seen. Finally, I loved having a reason to see the match that launched Sting into a top guy in WCW for the rest of the promotion's existence. He's my favorite babyface WCW ever had, and in all those years working for Ted Turner, he never turned heel even once. And it's nice to see this incredibly athletic Sting, rather than the orange-haired Pantagenarian? The fuck is that? Pantagenarian. We saw at Survivor Series. I am not looking forward to seeing that man's current vertical leap when he tries his first Stinger splash in WWE. But damn, didn't Sting look like a dope standing awkwardly in the ring while the announcers recapped the show at the end, and I didn't even mention those sweet bumpers before and after commercial breaks. WCW is the gift that keeps on giving, a perfect score of 10 out of 10.
Finally, Dwayne in Ireland. Despite the recent run of Shane Douglas appearances on the recent review waves, this show marks the third straight week that Jim Cornette has made an appearance on the show you guys have reviewed. I feel this deserves its own acknowledgement. I wonder if he can go one better than Douglas and make it four in a row next week. Doubtful. Clearly,
he was quietly on a Japan tour.
Yeah. Clearly, the TV title match would be the genesis of what would later be known as the unified MMA rules of 3 5-minute rounds. I just hope the UFC isn't influenced by the show too much, or we'll have Playboy Playmates and C-list TV stars judging world championship matches. Also, long before... still, the NWA clearly had a strong in-ring product at this time, and despite the stupid college rules one-count rule in the opener and the shitty draw in the main event, it was a solid show and made a star out of Sting for sure. A much better show than the WrestleMania it went head-to-head with.
All right, well, thanks everyone for your feedback. You can always leave it at lawradio.proboards.com, and you can check out our archives on said message board. And as we wind things up, next week on the show, Mr. Ting, our good pal Damian Abraham is going to be returning as he's going to be joining us for a review as we head overseas. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Maybe this will prompt you to dive into New Japan World.
Yeah.
Providing the show is on New Japan World, which I don't even quite know if it is or not, but it is a very easily accessible show.
What show is that?
We are going to go... Because it's Tokyo Dome season, we are going to go back and review the Tokyo Dome card from January the 4th of 1994, Battlefield, featuring Hulk Hogan taking on Tatsumi Fujinami. Plus, we're going to see Antonio Inoki headlining that card, and where there is Hulk Hogan, how far can Ed Leslie be? Yes, Ed Leslie is going to work a singles match at the Tokyo Dome next week.
My.
This is going to be... a hell of a review. This was during Hogan's hiatus from the U.S. scene before he went to WCW and after he had left the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
So we will go back. January the 4th, 1994. If you simply search on YouTube, New Japan Pro Wrestling Battlefield, this will come up in two parts very easily. So it's not a hard show to find.
Yeah, if we do get a chance to watch this on New Japan World, NJPW World, we'll talk about that too.
Yeah, we can chat about the service, definitely. Mm-hmm. So next week, that will be our review. We're with Damian Abraham and anyone you'd like to thank, Wei? What do you have coming up?
Thank? What are
your
you
sponsors?
About? I don't have any sponsors.
You're now sponsored by Open Mat and...
They don't sponsor me.
Your swimming pool.
Okay.
And...
No.
Nope. That's it.
I'd like to thank The Law.
Oh.
Live Audio Wrestling. It's Christmas season, everybody. What better way to show your appreciation for your loved ones than a John Pollock t-shirt?
Yes. And by the time you are hearing this, we will have the thread up to start the Christmas gift wrapping contest where you can submit your...
Did we do that last year? Did people submit raps? What did we do last year?
We just did music. Which is what we're asking for.
What were the songs?
You don't remember any of this?
No, I've completely
forgotten. Like, we got so many last year.
What did we... Who won?
Well, you can go back to the thread, which I'm sure exists somewhere.
What were the songs? Oh, the jingles.
Yes.
Oh, okay, now I remember. Sorry, man. Yes. It's been a long year.
So you can submit your musical submissions, and we will use them on the annual Christmas show coming up on Christmas morning.
Nice.
Which
cool.
Me and Wei are going to spend together. We've bought our Christmas tree for our booth.
Christmas. Okay, yeah. Nice, man. Cool. Thanks.
Are you about to check out here?
This is the jingle
bells. Look at that. Aren't you festive? Maybe we can go out with a song. Can you put together a song?
I mean, you're the Christmas one.
Okay, let's go out with something Christmassy.
What's your favorite jingle? How about this Christmas jingle? Sting's first theme.
Man Called Sting?
No, it's different. It's the one that he came out to on this show. It's actually not Man Called Sting. There were no lyrics, but it's like the most generic 80s sounding rock theme.
Okay, we'll go out with that. Sounds great. It'll be a great setup for next week's Tokyo Dome show, which will probably have a very generic presentation from Ed Leslie.
Nice.
Okay, we will chat with you all next week. Tokyo Dome card, January 4th, 1994, Battlefield, on Review Away.
Christmas, guys, coming.
Scott. The fans here anxious to hear the judge's decision as they lower J.J. Dillon down from the cage. I think we have to take our hats off and a salute to two of the most intense, two of the most phenomenal athletes I personally have ever seen.